Welcome to this episode, number 12, excuse me, of the Yahweh blog on In the Garden. This will be our 12th part of this series, explaining what occurred in the Garden of Eden and how that applies to our future. Turns out that if we study the events of the Garden of Eden as they were chronicled in the book of Bereshith, Genesis, we can not only ascertain what has transpired from that date nearly 6,000 years ago to today and how mankind has been led astray, but we can also surmise where God wants to take us, because he is returning his family to the Garden of Great Joy. So there's a lot to learn. Where we left off in part 11 of this series was that God had just asked Adam, why did you do this? And he's about to ask Chawa, so you want to explain yourself? So let's tune back in. The basic message that God is conveying is that if we trust him and do as he instructs, he warrants that we will live with him in the conditions depicted in the Garden of Great Joy, because this is for what we were designed. But if we don't follow his instructions, preferring to place our faith in a perversion of his guidance, he is warning us that there will be undesirable consequences. Again, the choice is ours. We witness both, not only in his words, but what is now happening, around the globe. Alas, mankind has never been very good at accepting responsibility. Adam, so the man, said, he muttered, the woman, you gave her to be with me to make the relationship better, and she offered it to me from the tree, so I ate it. No. I mean, that's a triple bat. That's a strikeout with one swing, and that's hard to do. So, first of all, he's saying, it's your fault, God, because you gave me the woman. That probably didn't resonate with Yahweh. I'm sure at that point, Yahweh said, okay, kid. That was not good. And then he said, to make the relationship better. In other words, God, you really screwed up a second time, because rather than making the relationship better, she made it worse. Yeah, now you're saying that God did a really crappy job of designing woman? Is that really your answer? So it's God's fault for giving you the woman, and then it's God's fault for his design of woman. I don't think I would have gone there if I had been Adam, but nonetheless, he did. She offered it to me. Now you're blaming her. You blamed God for providing the woman. You blamed God for the faulty design. And now you're blaming the woman for offering it to you. So I ate. Good grief, pal. I mean, this is pathetic. I've long said that, listen, Chawa was clearly embittered. Chawa made a lot of bad decisions. She wanted to be like a god. She was not happy with the way things were going. But nonetheless, she's not the principal problem here. And the fact that religions have this propensity to blame, they call her Eve. Her name is Chawa, which means one who proclaims her mind, or speaks her mind. Which is really apropos in her condition, that they want to blame her for giving the fruit to Adam. Matter of fact, the Quran goes so far as to say that Eve is totally to blame and that Adam never would have done it. And because she did this, women have been made stupid ever since. actually says that, not in the Quran. I think it's actually in the Hadith, but it's affirmed in the Quran. We have a real tough time accepting responsibility. You know, I've been trying to deal with a horrible corruption that has come up right in our midst using my translations and being promoted by people that were once associated with me. And we have now proven four times over that there is nothing about them that is accurate, authentic, legitimate, appropriate. And one of those strikes should have been enough to just to get them to say, okay, we made a mistake. We're sorry, we won't do it anymore. The second, okay, you made your point. We got it. We were foolish. We accept responsibility. We won't do this anymore. The third time, all right, already. Okay, we may be thick-headed, but we got it. And the fourth time, of course, was last night with the perversion of Yahweh's name. And still, I don't see them taking responsibility or capitulating. This has been man's and woman's problem for a very long time. Now, to Adam's credit, every word that he said was actually true. To his shame, he was wrong about everything he stated and implied, and he failed to take any responsibility. Yes, Yahweh gave man the gift of woman. Wonderful, best gift ever. And he also gave us much more. He gave us a nefesh, soul, to observe and then respond to the world around us. And he gave us a nesama, a conscience, to ascertain right from wrong, good from bad, to be moral, and free will so that we can make responsible choices. And then he shared his Torah guidance so that we could make the most of every opportunity. In his reply, Adam is admitting to having squandered all of it, forfeiting his soul, conscious, volition, and the instruction. And there is no indication that he made any effort to survey the situation, frame the issue appropriately, put the pieces of the puzzle together to see how he had erred, ponder the implications, consider the guidance he had been given, or to independently decide the course of action for himself. He did not say, yes, I know you said this, and I should have remembered. He didn't say, yes, I know you said this. I didn't communicate it properly to Chawa, and I didn't want her to feel all alone in that decision, so I joined in. No. There's none of that. This was not a thoughtful reply. This was an emotional knee-jerk reaction. And those typically get us into a lot of trouble. Now, Satan had manipulated Adam and Chawa into what would become the culture of humankind, a cultish exercise in group dynamics that would take many forms over the millennia, but change very little. Men and women would gang up under the strongest and usually the most vicious man. Those ensuing associations would be defensive. They would be aggressive. They would be used for hunting and sometimes even for determining whose land could be farmed and who would do the work. Some would be political. Others would be religious. They were intertwined, these beasts of deception. With reasons varying from cultural to militaristic, sometimes economic, sometimes conspiratorial, sometimes embracing all of the above, man was now listening to and responding to his fellow man and to a very demonic and contrarian influence. Not God. The voice of religion, the voice of politics, the voice of conspiracy and of economic schemes has remained the same throughout the ages. And it did not take much. Just the inference that you wouldn't die, that there was an opportunity for you to do whatever you want to do and still continue to live, and that the only reason you've been told not to do it is God is afraid of you, that if you do this, you'll be just like him, and well, he'll lose his stature. No, the opposite is true. God wants us to be like him. He wants us to know everything he knows. He wants us to rise up and be empowered and enriched. That is his entire intent with us. And Satan managed to invert that, to infer that God doesn't want us to be as great as he, when that is the entire purpose of the covenant, of the Torah, of the Moed Mikre, is to make us ever more like him. But you see, Satan is very good at the mirror image, putting things on their head, giving the implication that the opposite is actually true. And even though these individuals had heard the directions directly from God, that didn't matter. They were more than willing not only to listen to a corruption of his testimony, not only to challenge a corruption of his testimony, which would have been the intelligent thing to do. God constantly tells us to go full force in challenging and destroying those who pervert his testimony. They didn't do either of the two. They didn't even think about the implications. They didn't bother to ponder what this would do to the relationship with God. All too willing, thoughtlessly, to believe a corruption, a perversion, a twisting of Yahweh's testimony. We see it everywhere. Judaism, Christianity, Islam, and of course in the new cult claiming to speak for God. The first kingdoms and those which would follow were all fascist. The king established the rules, owned almost all of the land, allowed only his most ardent supporters to possess the rest, controlled everyone's lives, and was the head of the religion, was considered a god, claimed divine right to rule, and was, of course, commander-in-chief of his cadre of militants. The people ate what they were given. They did all of the work and received very little of the benefit. This is the story of human history, with the exception of the militaries were used to bludgeon neighbors, to kill, to enslave. Over the past two centuries, men, and more recently women, indoctrinated in the culture of man, have been given the opportunity, at least in America, to vote between two candidates offered up by competing political cults called democracy, based upon the myth that it existed in Greece and then in Rome, when neither was true. People unwilling to consider the guidance of God that he has provided, or take responsibility for themselves, be accountable, or even learn what they need to know to make an intelligent decision, are typically bribed into voting for one of two candidates who will expand the influence of government and that robs others of what they have actually earned and enriches those who are advocating what is essentially legalized theft. We call the result entitlements via an imposing bureaucracy. As governments grow in stature, man shrinks in stature. In the collectivism of socialism, education becomes indoctrination, and freedom is just an illusion, as opportunities and economic progress are stifled. Around libertard progressives, you do not have freedom of speech anymore. We were, for reasons I'm not sure I understand, but the 10-7 video, which is the raw footage of what occurred on 10-7, I think it's the single most important video of our age. Nothing is more essential to preventing another 10-7 from happening, preventing those who are marching in the streets and taking over college campuses to be thwarted from doing so than knowing the truth about what happened on 10-7. Yeah, it's a tough view. But truth in this case is essential to the survival of humankind. I presented it on Facebook with two long letters, one to Mark Zuckerberg himself, telling him about the importance of what we were doing, and the other introducing this as it should be viewed. And on X, it's one of two videos. This one I introduced to X. The other one has been making the round on X for some time with me, adding many comments to it and reposting it. It is quite simply the single most important thing that we can do as people is to watch this, because the world is being torn apart with progressives and with their Muslim alliances calling for the extermination of Israel and literally rallying in favor of those who perpetrated these heinous acts on this day. You can't even call them animalistic. It's far worse than that. They were demonic in their depravity and their savagery. It demeans animals to refer to them as animals. And it was all religiously motivated the entire time they were screaming Allahu Akbar. Facebook has responded appropriately. Yes, it is a video that needs to be seen. And the letters that I wrote introducing it were appropriate. The same thing is true on X. It was not true on YouTube. The either thought police or the ownership of YouTube, like the owner of the founder of YouTube, is my neighbor. He's out windsurfing on the next island over. Don't want you to know the truth. They want to preclude you from knowing the truth. And this is a truth that is shaping, redefining the world, that the world will not survive unless it watches, unless you know what happened and understand why those who are perpetrating those heinous events, those heinous, disgusting, violent acts, or yelling Allahu Akbar, then you're part of the problem, not the solution. And so while we received a strike from YouTube, the strike really belongs to YouTube. They showed incredibly poor moral judgment. And to the credit of Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk, these videos were allowed on X and on Facebook because they are essential to our very survival. Well, this is the problem today of progressives. They want to control the discourse. They have allied with Muslims, so they don't want you to know what Muslims have actually done. And soon, individual consciousness will be so seared that good judgment will be non-existent, as will access to valid instruction and information. And with the ability to make reasoned decisions based on accurate evidence gone, what hope is there for humankind? Unfortunately, man eats what he is given. Culture is the cause of most human failings. It has been a curse from its inception. The history of civilization is the story of war. It is the story of war. The history of civilization is the story of mass extermination of peoples. There really are no exceptions. It's the story of oppression and control, of subjugation and greed, of indoctrination and of sacrificing lives, constraining freedom, of men claiming to speak for God, for men oppressing women, for literally sacrificing little children's lives to their gods, enslaving all they can reach, plundering the hard work of others. The story of civilization, whether it's in the Americas, whether it's in the Middle East, whether it's in Europe, whether it's in Africa, is the same. And it is horrid, and it has been horrid for as long as there has been written history. Not recognizing this and perpetuating the collectivization of humankind only makes it worse. And that is another strike against progressives. You see, individual men and women can be both good and bad. Well, most people are essentially useless. They don't think. They don't exercise their conscience. They don't make much of a contribution to our world. They feel entitled. And so most people contribute very little. And there's some that are just horrible parasites. You know, I care about Israel. So the Haredim are just complete and utter parasites. They're counterproductive. And the progressives that are draping themselves in all manner of flags, claiming that they are the last bastion of democracy, are exactly the opposite. And they have torn Israel apart for their own selfish agenda, because they don't like the government that was elected by the people. And they would trade anything for the freedom of a few hostages, not knowing that for every hostage that is freed under these circumstances, thousands, likely tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of Jews will die. We are collectively losing the ability to think. At least two generations have been indoctrinated in academic institutions so that exercising good judgment, understanding rhetoric and fallacies, being able to distinguish between right and wrong no longer exists. People are motivated and swayed now by opinions, influencers, and political platitudes. It is a very, very distressing time that we're entering, and it's why the earth over these next 8.5 years is going to cascade into a hell of man's making. Now, for these reasons and more, Yahweh is openly adverse to politics. And as I was saying, that while men and women individually can be good or bad, most meaningless, collectively, men and women are almost always bad. The larger the group, the worse they become. You know, look at the influence of Roman Catholicism, of Imperial Rome. Look at the influence of the Holy Roman Empire in Europe. It's almost overwhelmingly negative. Look now at the influence of Islam. Destructive, deadly, deceitful. These are truths that people do not realize, that individual humans can be good, bad, or indifferent. But collectivized, which is what socialism, communism, progressivism advocates, humankind becomes dastardly, exceedingly abusive and controlling. So while I'm not going to advocate for a political party, I can tell you that if you identify yourself with Yahweh, less when it comes to government is always more freedom and sense of responsibility for individuals. Yahweh is also against religion, militarism, conspiracy. He is an advocate for free enterprise over fascism and is more, and it's even more controlling twin communism. And that is because he values human autonomy, freedom to work, individual responsibility and accountability. But for any of it to be vital, we must use our conscience, our consciousness, and free will to listen to Yahweh's guidance and then make informed and rational decisions, which did not occur on this day 6,000 years ago and has occurred very infrequently over these past 6 millennia. And it most certainly is not happening today. Now, this is the antithesis of what Adam did on this day, and yet it is what men and women still do to this day. We have not learned from the past, and so we are continuing to repeat it. Should you care for a dissenting view, blame it all on the woman. According to Muhammad, Allah made women stupid as a result of this woman's culpability, even though he didn't know her name and claimed that she ate from a wheat tree. Yes, I said that correctly. She ate from a wheat tree. But I would not vouch for him because Islam's lone messenger said that hell was filled with women hanging from meat hooks that were piercing their breasts because they were ungrateful to such men as Muhammad. He claimed the reason for different races and that the reason that they are different colors is because they match the dirt from which Allah extracted them. He also said that the sun goes to bed each night in a muddy spring, exhausted, I suppose, because it spends all day, according to the brilliance of Muhammad, racing the moon. Oh, and speaking of hell, it is the only place that Allah is depicted throughout the Quran, indulging himself by torturing those who would not worship him. Anyway, turning his attention to the woman and back to Bar-Rasheeth, we hear then Yahweh, who is God, said to the woman, Isha, in our last program, you remember how many times I tried to direct your attention to what Isha means? And here it is. It means woman. Female individual. Why, Ma, did you do this? Pretty good question, huh? Why did you do this? You think the woman said, because I wanted to be like God? That I wanted what Satan over here also wants, that he wants to be like God? And so I thought, why not? Take a bite. Be a God. He told me I wasn't going to die. Why not? Why not someone else speak for you? And the woman said, the tempting and the toxic creature, Ha Nakash, the sorceress snake, this venomous viper, decided to deceive and delude me. And so I ate. The devil made me do it. Didn't take responsibility either. Do you think that when it comes time for Christians to face the sour notes that are going to befall them, that the excuse will be accepted that Paul deceived and deluded us, knowing that Paul admitted in the second letter to Corinth that he was demon-possessed. In other words, the devil made me do it. You think that's going to fly with God? What about when Jews say, well, I mean, we missed the fact that Dodo was the Messiah, and we're now parading around under the sign of the false Messiah, and we have been embittered against you. We erased your name. We've done everything we could to irritate you going back 3,400 years, but it's really not our fault because, well, Akiba made us do it. Akiba deceived and deluded me. When Yahweh's testimony, his Torah, his prophets, the Mizmor, have been available to you between 2,500 and 3,500 years to determine whether or not Akiba, Maimonides, et al. Lied to you, and you didn't bother to make that comparison, do you think God's going to buy you that excuse? Ruh-roh. No. Of course, there is no excuse for Muslims because they have been ordered by Allah, and they are told to follow Muhammad's example, and both claim to have terrorized, murdered, perpetrated genocide, really, plundered, enslaved Jews. So you think there's going to be any excuse of any kind for them? God's really not into excuses, by the way. I'll cut to the chase and answer those questions in case you were hanging on to the hope that hope matters, that faith matters, that having a good heart matters. But that doesn't mean anything. Being right is all that matters when it comes to God. Well, she didn't accept responsibility either, and clearly she was complicit. She not only misquoted God, she wanted to become like God. She, in contrast to Adam, surveyed the situation, thought about it, and made a conscious decision. Then she passed her lapse in judgment over to the man. What she did not do was what I have done in these 30 some odd books behind me. She did not compare the false claims about God to the actual statements that God has made. That is why I wrote the 5 volumes of Goddamn Religion. It's why I wrote the 5 volumes of Twistianity. It's why I wrote the 3 volumes of Babel. Yahweh sets an example for us throughout the Torah, throughout the prophets, that the first thing we have to do is expose and condemn the lies. We must go about the job of clearing away the rubbish that man has piled, both religious and political, even conspiratorial, on top of the truth, so that we can then dig deeply, find the truth for ourselves as God delivered it, study it, examine it, contemplate it, and understand it. And part of that process is comparing the lies to reality. It's why we have a nesama, a conscience. She did not do that. Knowing that she had made a horrible mistake, she ended up bringing Adam down with her. She became what the adversary had projected. This precipitous decline from good to bad occurred because of Nasha, delusional and beguiling deceptions. Whether it is Nasha with a shin or Nasa with a sin, in the third statement that Yah etched in stone, it bears me addressing this at this point. God either said that to deceive, to offer beguiling deceptions in the name of Yahweh is an unforgivable sin. Or he said something that is much less criminal in its intent and therefore much less troubling for everyone. This obviously is troubling for those of you who can hear Asher bark in the background. She wants to be part of the program. But if it is simply Nasa, as in the verb meaning to lift up, to promote, to tolerate, to accept, then to accept the degradation of Yahweh's name is an unforgivable sin. Erasing Yahweh's name, changing Yahweh's name, manipulating Yahweh's name in any way, hiding Yahweh's name, corrupting Yahweh's name, anything associated with this, which Judaism is a major contributor, as is Christianity, as is Islam. It's not even announced in progressive academia. So you need to think that through. That it's one of two. It's Nasa is the active verb. And there is really no way to ascertain for certain if it was written as Nasa or Nasha, because the shin sin was never distinguished in the original text. I don't know if you know that or not. It's a more recent projection. And as a result of that, you would be guilty of committing the unforgivable sin by deceiving and deluding anyone by your manipulation of Yahweh's name. or even if you tolerated those who did. So, if I were to, for example, accept what they had done, then I would be guilty of this. But you notice I didn't, nor should you. So, this decline occurred because of Nasha, which is either to lift up lies or to promote delusional and beguiling deceptions. Culture, like civilization, is something we are conditioned into embracing as good. Take the protests of Black Lives Matter, for example. Well, it sounds nice as a term. Sure, Black Lives Matter. All lives should matter. They claim that the culture is racist, that whites are suppressing and killing blacks. And of course, the opposite is true. And it's easily demonstrated that the opposite is true. The problem in the African-American culture is that black young men lacking proper guidance are 8 times more criminally violent than others. And when a black person is killed, 93% of the time, the perpetrator is also black, even though they represent 12% of the population. That's a stunning revelation, and it negates every aspect of the Black Lives Matter protests. And yet, libertards and everyone else across the nation and the world supported them when they were promoting an outright deception. What they were doing is shirking responsibility. It's not my culture. It's not my fault that we're killing one another. Must be someone else's. The standard operating modus operandi between all conspiracy cults. Those who promote conspiracies have unhappy, unfulfilling lives, and they're looking for someone else to blame. The one common denominator amongst all of them. Adam and Chawa are doing the same thing, and they learn nothing. The only viable solution is to accept responsibility and then strive to improve. What did I do when it became obvious to me that I had, through just compassion and enthusiasm, overhyped the position and the influence of the Ruach? I came to you. I looked you right in the eye. I presented the most troubling passage in this regard. I explained it to you. I took full responsibility for it and did a number of shows to highlight the truth so that you might know it. This is what a responsible person does. This is what Yahweh wants us to do. He wants us. Now, I shouldn't say he's not encouraging us to make mistakes, but he knows we will because we're imperfect individuals. And what he's looking for is someone with the courage and backbone, the compassion and the character to own up to our mistakes. I mean, it is true across the board with every implement that Yahweh uses, and it is an essential element of the character composition, the aptitudes and attitudes that cause Yahweh to choose one person over another. We exude credibility or not. Not based upon being perfect, because no human being has ever been. You don't start off with total and complete knowledge, ever, under any circumstances, on any subject. So you're learning as you go. And as you go, well, you know, we found out that bloodletting wasn't a viable cure for smallpox. So we learned. We said that's not a good thing to do. Let's try something different. And it's true across the board on everything. So it is by accepting responsibility that we gain credibility, that we reestablish our relationship with God. Look at that incident where Miriam and Aaron both came to Moshe and said, you know, we too speak for God. And God said, well, come here, stand aside. It was a little conversation here. And he said, listen, I would be rough with you, Miriam, even if your father had spit in your face, because you need to shut up. And you're expelled from the community, and I'm plaguing you right now with leprosy. And then he wrote on and on and on about how to deal with leprosy, even though there's not a single other case in the Torah about anybody other than Miriam with leprosy, all to tell us exactly how we should respond in such cases. But what did Aaron do, by contrast? He's stupid me. I should never have done that. I'm really sorry. Never do it again. He took responsibility. See how far that goes with Yahweh? Something we all need to learn, that making a mistake is okay, so long as when you have the opportunity to correct it, you do. And you embrace the truth. The American South, for example, was exceedingly racist. They were oppressive. 70 years ago. Terrible. What they did in terms of segregation and the like, and their attitude is despicable. But those conditions are largely gone. And more importantly, affirmative action and the transfer of trillions of dollars from Caucasians to Blacks have created tremendous opportunities for African Americans. Moreover, what happened in a minority of American states six generations ago is not responsible for what is occurring today. In reality, with all of its failings, and boy, do I ever delineate them, the fact is that America has become the least racist, most universally opportunistic nation for minorities in the history of humankind. The very opposite of cancel culture. The professors, the media, the politicians that are advancing it can't be reasonable. They are incapable of examining the evidence and drawing a logical conclusion, a moral conclusion. Yes, America has become the most universally opportunistic nation for minorities in the history of humankind. And yet, it is being squandered. So why are African Americans blaming others for what they have done to themselves? And worse, why do so many agree with them? If you genuinely care about prolonging life, then why aren't you trying to resolve the problems in the culture that are robbing far too many Blacks of their lives? The truth is, the problem has nothing whatsoever to do with ethnicity, race, skin color, nothing. It has all to do with upbringing. The cult of man is the reason for the fall of man. Now, retaining our focus on the verb nasha, spelled identically in the Hebrew to nasai, as I have shared, it is the operative word and the third instruction that Yahweh etched in stone for our edification. You wonder why I'm repeating myself, as my presentation previously was totally extemporaneous, and I now find that I shared this in the text of the book that I'm trying to convey to you at this time. And I'm not going to shy away from that, because as I've shared previously, the single most effective way to transfer information from short-term to long-term memory where it can be used over the rest of your life and put into action is to extend the time that you're thinking about it from a matter of seconds to a matter of minutes. If we can do that, then you will own this information forever. And you can use it and you can apply it to your life. So this is always worth doing. I point this out because in Paleo-Hebrew, there is no distinction between the sin and the shin. It's a later development. The S or the SH sound, if you will. on the tablet, it was usually and errantly translated as take, but it means to lift up, carry forward, bear, desire, exalt, forgive, or respect. Versus to deceive, to negate, to beguile. If it's simply Nassau versus Nashaw. There, it is used in conjunction with the negation of Yahweh's name becoming an unforgivable offense. Now, the problem with translating Nassau as lift, carry forward, lift up, and respect, much less take, is that it puts the perpetrator in the woman's shoes, carrying forward, lifting up, and respecting the beguiling deceptions of another. It is one thing to hold the perpetrator of delusions like Satan, the adversary, accountable, but should someone like Chawa that accepted the lie be judged by it? And that's the difference between the SH sound and the S sound as it relates to the definition of these words. In one case, the person being condemned is, well, to the largest extent, you would say the perpetrator of it, and therefore Nashaw. But with Nassau, it's also the person they deceived, because they should have known better. And as you read through this and Yahweh's response, he judges them both, suggesting in the Torah that they Nashaw and Nassau understandings both apply. So if Yahweh intended Nassau, S, rather than SH, rather than Nashaw, SH, then simply concurring with the removal of Yahweh's name from his Torah, perpetuating that, or corrupting it to serve some personal agenda, would be unforgivable. And yet, if Yahweh intended us to read Nashaw, then it is deliberate deception, delusions, which take others away from God, which become the unresolvable crime. It's a far more significant crime. In the case of the white Goyim Motherites, if it is Nashaw, then the builders of the hive and their translator and the queen mother, as well as those who are illustrating their scheme, have forfeited their souls. If it is Nassau, everyone they have drawn into the hive has forfeited their souls. And I'm here to tell you, it is impossible in the text to differentiate between the two. And so both definitions apply. And when you look at what Yahweh did in the case of judging the serpent and the woman, you'll see that both definitions apply. And that explains why it is so essential that I continue to expose and condemn what they have done. Because the last thing I want, the last thing God wants, is to have more people lured away and deceived. He does not want people losing their souls, particularly to something as foolish as this. My reasoning is that Adam and Chawa remained potentially redeemable if it is Nashaw, even if the consequence of their actions turned out to be blessings. I'm hoping that the intent was Nashaw as it relates to the beguiling of people through the corruption and perversion and negating of God's name. Because I would hope that those who have been drawn into that nest don't suffer. There's every reason to conclude, well, I'm not sure about this, but there are reasons that we could surmise that Adam and Chawa are in Shamayim. I think there is that possibility for Adam. I don't think so for Chawa, because if we pursue this story of in the garden to its natural conclusion and we find out how hateful she became of God, I don't think it's likely. We don't hear much more from Adam, actually. So it is possible there. Adam could be like Aaron in the story of the embittered rebellion, where he may have come clean, and Chawa did not. She doubled down, and so she probably represents Miriam in that story. But at one time, God loved them. More importantly, Yahweh's Torah guidance does not exist to condemn us, but to exonerate us. But it will only exonerate us if we take responsibility and accept its terms and conditions. We apply them to our lives, and we stay steadfast regarding it. Yahweh prefers to lift us up. He does not want to push us down, but sometimes there's nothing he can do because we do this to ourselves. His seven Moed Mikre leads to our emancipation and to our redemption. The covenant is a family. It's not a courtroom, but it is a courtroom for those who are excluded. Lest I miss an opportunity to correct religious deceit, please understand that there is only one sin which is universally deadly from a spiritual perspective. And since negating Yahweh's name is it, Catholicism's seven deadly sins are rubbish. Souls can be and are routinely redeemed from lust, gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, envy, and pride, but not from any form of deceit, which leads people away from knowing Yahweh's name. There is, by the way, an unforgivable sin that's actually presented in the Christian New Testament and is promoted by Roman Catholics. And interestingly, it is devaluing the role of the Holy Spirit, which is the role that the Spirit Mom is fulfilling in the life of the white goyim motherites. The lesson here is that accepting responsibility is simple, it's straightforward, it is beneficial. So it is perplexing that 6,000 years later, less than one in a million are willing to stand up and be accountable. Considering the example Yahweh has set forth, it must be heartbreaking for him to see us this way. You know, I spend an hour or two or more every day on X in the midst of the battle. And I can tell you that my primary goal is to help Yisraelites, Yehudim, take full responsibility. I want their messages to be totally true, not partly true. Now, this plays a lot when they blame Hamas for this, that, and the other. And I said, no, the problem isn't Hamas. Hamas is simply a symptom. If you continue to lash out at symptoms, you're going to make the problem worse. They will crow about, you know, the demolition of Gaza. And I said, no, by using bullets and bombs, as I foretold on 10/7 and 23, you made the situation worse. When you attack a religion with bullets and bombs, you make more of the religious zealots that hate you than you can possibly kill. And so I go over and over again, you know, they'll talk about Hashem and G-D and the like. And I have to constantly say, no, that doesn't exist. And then you'll have right-wing Christians that speak of Jesus is going to come save them. And I said, no, there is no Jesus. He was a complete and crude counterfeit, never existed. And so this is the job that I'm trying to perform. And I will tell you that while there are many of you in the covenant family that are actively engaged and very, very busy on X, helping us accomplish this mission, and our numbers are growing very quickly now on X in terms of the audience who is listening. It's a tough go out there to get people to accept responsibility. Now, obviously, Yahweh knew the answer to the questions he asked both Adam and Chawa. And since he queried Adam and Chawa, but not Satan, we can reasonably conclude that he had either admitted to having been wrong and asked for an opportunity to show that they would not repeat the same mistake, Yahweh would have obliged. So if Chawa, and by asking this question, because he did not ask it of Hasatan, What Yahweh is actually conveying here, why did you do this? If they had come clean and said, because I chose to misrepresent your testimony, because I chose to ignore your testimony instructions, because I chose to believe someone's very close corruption, and it's Hasatan's diversion from the truth was very narrow. because I chose to believe them is why I that was my mistake, and I'm sorry for that. By asking that question, he's begging those answers from them, giving them the opportunity for their Aaron moment to say, I was wrong, and this is how I was wrong. And I think it would have been entirely different, because the eating from that tree lest you die was written in the imperfect mood, which means all you had to do was stop. So I think that the situation would have been entirely different had they accepted responsibility. However, until we are willing to admit that we have been wrong and show a desire to improve, to correct the record, there is very little God can do for us. It is the same for any parent and for any child. The other lesson is that the choice to reject Yahweh, for it to be credible, deceit and death must have an advocate. And that is the reason Hasatan, as the Nakash, the serpent, was permitted to misrepresent Yahweh's instructions. And so we find it everywhere. I mean, we find it, you know, in the new white Goyim motherites. They're perverting Yahweh's instructions. They have their own little pocket translator to parrot what they want to convey. And they have all manner of lies that they would promote. And of course, the worst are Christianity, Islam, and Judaism in this regard. So Satan is very adept at encouraging his minions to misrepresent Yahweh's name and his instructions. You notice that in that whole episode, Yahweh's name was never mentioned. And while the world is no longer Eden and the adversary, he, however, is still here. And for the same reason. People so easily fall for lies. That's one of the things that has been so frustrating. It was so frustrating for me 15 years ago when so many of the listeners to this program came from a conspiracy cult called Unpopular Truth. And they made the mistake of intermingling, babble, if you will, commingling lies with truth, and weaving their conspiracies, which were political, into the testimony I was delivering on behalf of Yahweh. And then they became very belligerent as they used the claim that they received for participating in my audio programs to abuse people, particularly women. And I shut it down hard. I became exceedingly aggressive and denouncing them from top to bottom. And over time, they dissipated into nothingness because we pulverized them. But unfortunately, almost all of those who are rebelling now and embittered and leading the new conspiracy are from the old conspiracy cult. And they're doing the same thing for the same reason. And well, they were given the same opportunity too. And well, I don't think I would be all that bothered if they went off and did their own thing, not playing off of my translating style and transliterations and translations and insights and the like. I would just write them off and say, well, that's another group of lost souls. They never came out of the conspiracy cult. But they took a goodly number of people who should have known better with them and have ruined them. And so that's a concern, and unchecked, they will ruin more lives, and they will do whatever they can to discredit Yahweh's chosen implement at a crucial time, such that this is Hasatan's way of saying, my last shot to preclude Shavua and Teruah, and therefore Kippurim. They picked the wrong foe. Now, free will is not only a prerequisite, as we've talked about, for a loving relationship. Choosing well must have its rewards, which means choosing poorly cannot be without consequence. After Adam and Chawa's disregard for Yahweh's Shawa instructions, life would be different. God's guidance would have no credibility if he were to ignore, cancel, or change it without consequence. As a result, Yahweh did not forgive them. Now, this is bad news for those who have accepted the copious and consistent negations and alterations to Yahweh's name and his instructions through all manner of conspiracies, Judaism, Islam, and conspiracy cults. Blaming Chawa is like saying that someone is responsible for our decisions and the first sin, the fall of man. It infers that God is going to overlook our reworking and repudiation of his name, his directions, and his instructions just because everybody else is doing it. Going along with the crowd did not help Adam, saying, I did it with a good heart. I was just trying to learn some more Torah. I was hoping that by eating of that tree, I would gain knowledge. And there's nothing wrong with gaining knowledge, is there? Blaming Satan is, which is to attribute our errant ways to religion, politics, academic deceptions, conspiracies, cults of all manner, did not prevail with Yahweh. God has established a standard. He has communicated his rules and his remedy, and he will judge those who violate them, rendering their societal, their religious, their academic, political excuses moot. There is but one acceptable approach, and that is through his Mikra invitations. This will be our last statement for this program. We'll read it as we do in so many programs, and then we return to it as we provide the next installment of In the Garden. Yahweh, the proper name of Yahweh, are Eloah, from which the O sound is from the wah, as directed by his Torah, where the O sound and the A sound are from the Hebrew wah and the he. Regarding his Hayah existence, the verb that Yahweh shared was the basis of his name, where we learn how to pronounce both the hey and the yod. And our shalom, restoration, which is the most commonly repeated word in Hebrew, which the O sound is from the wa, therefore Yahweh, God, Elohim, responded to the spellbinding serpent, Hala. Nakash, the sorcerer snake, this venomous viper and poisonous, cold-blooded reptile, this tempting and toxic creature. It's from Nakash. It means the one who enchants and captivates, particularly regarding the divine, the one who practices magic and sorcery and who indulges in prophecy to capitalize by invoking the claim of supernatural knowledge. Lots of snakes in our midst. As a consequence of this, you have acted in a way that you have brought a curse upon yourself, a arar. You have invoked injury, misfortune, affliction, and harm, earning a reputation for yourself more than any other beast, more than any other form of life, beyond all other conscious existence of this environment. On your belly, you shall move about. The dirt you shall eat all of the days of your lives. Bereshith in the beginning, Genesis 3:14. There are some treasures in this, and I will highlight a few of them as we conclude this program, and we'll pick it up in the next. First of all, it is essential. It is the first step to God. You have to know his name. You have to know how to pronounce his name. You need to know the way his name is spelled. You need to know what his name means. You need to know why he revealed his name. You need to know why he wants you to proclaim his name. You need to know everything about Yahweh's name. And unfortunately, his people have erased his name, not only from his testimony, but from their lives. And the two most popular religions in the world have replaced his name. There is no solution with God. There's no approaching God. There is no relationship with him. There is no having an appreciation of the truth until you begin at this point and you replace all of the lies and deceptions. Jesus Christ, Lord, Adonai, Hashem, G-D, Allah, the like of it, Mother Earth, Mother God, Mother and Son, Madonna and Child, Queen of Heaven, Mother of God, the Asherah myth, the Lord myth of Baal. Until you discard them all and you replace all of that trash with the truth and you begin with Yahweh's name, you're nowhere. There's no hope for it. He is God, Elohim. He said to this spellbinding serpent, and now we know why he chose this depiction for him. He is spellbinding. He is sorceress. He is a snake. He is venomous. He is a viper. He is poisonous. He is cold-blooded and reptilian. He's tempting. He's toxic. He enchants. He captivates, particularly regarding God. He practices sorcery, and he indulges in prophecy to capitalize by invoking the claim of supernatural knowledge. Spirit told me. And he said, as a consequence, okay, as a result, asha means to act, to do, to engage. You have acted, you have done something in this way. And as a result, you have brought upon yourself a curse. You have harmed yourself. You have injured yourself. You have caused affliction. You've earned retribution for yourself. There is a consequence of twisting ever so slightly my testimony to deceive. More than any other. And then he has Bahama, which is a beast. You know, the beasts are Babylon, Media, Persia, Greece, Imperial Rome, the Roman Catholic Church. More than any other beast, more than any other form of life, men, ha, chaya, more than any other life form, means that the Kerub and the Malach are very much alive. And this particular individual is worse than any animal and any of the beasts that evolved from Babel to the present day. And in the open environment, the open environs outside their walled enclosure, the place where religion and politics, militarism and conspiracy prevail. Women are abused. Men fight and kill. People are enslaved. They're controlled. It is there that on your belly, as a reptile in contact with the earth, you shall move about. The Kerub, representing the adversary, they came into off the wall of the garden as a powerful, brilliant light with tremendous knowledge and influence. He was beautiful. Well, he was a spirit, so I don't know if it's he or she, but nonetheless, beautiful. Yeah, the Kerub is a Ruach. Far more powerful, even internal, so different than humankind. He had everything that humankind didn't have, except for two things: free will and the fact that Yahweh created humankind for the purpose of a loving family relationship, and therefore valued them and looked at the Kerub and the Malach as tools, implements. Considerable difference in those two. And now he would be demoted. He is nothing but a snake. He is the snake of Paul as he created the counterfeit to Jesus Christ. He is the snake that would put the dead God on a stick. He is the snake of Akiba, who would foist the false Messiah on his people and cause the diaspora leading to the Holocaust, and that who created the religion of Judaism. He is the snake that brought you and humankind the destructive and demonic nature of Islam, the Quran, and Hadith. He is now demoted so that his abilities have been hugely curtailed. Now he has to prevail through men and women. He has to entice them. He has to encourage them. It's the same thing in the Quran throughout. Allah claims to have been a terrorist. He claims to have perpetrated genocide against civilization after civilization, and yet there's no indication that Allah actually did anything. The only miracle attributed to him is he made the wind blow in the desert. Big whoop. So what he has to do is he has to encourage men and women to kill for him. And that's why he made Islam based on the Pledge of Aqaba. We pledge to wage war against all mankind. For the ongoing edict in the Quran is that to be a good Muslim, you must fight and kill for Allah. That's why I tell Muslims who want to kill me for exposing the truth about their Quran and their Hadith, their Prophet, and their God. If you think your God is so Akbar, have Allah come to get me. Certainly he knows where I am. Certainly he's Akbar. Send him after me rather than proving that I'm right about you. And so Hasatan was hugely demoted. He is not the powerful influence that people think he is. But he does have a way of possessing certain individuals along life's way and working with them to negate Yahweh's purpose, because this serpent does not want to be known as the adversary. He wants to be worshipped as God. And so all the ploys that he perpetrates are for that exact purpose, and it's important that you know that distinction. Well, this is now the conclusion of this episode of the Yahweh Blog. I have been your host, Craig Wynn. Thank you for listening.